Good evening.
Good evening.
Tonight we will conclude our exploration of the 10 Buddhist precepts. We will look at number 9 and number 10. So then, the 9th precept, the prohibitive version of it, says, no being angry. Don't be angry. It's like an admonishment, you know, that teachers or parents give to some child to instruct, to teach how to be in this world. But it's quite narrow. It's very negative. Don't be angry. There is another version that we use here. I'll call it the enlightened version of the 9th precept. It says, dwelling in equanimity. But originally, I think all of these precepts came from something that was said or lectured centuries ago. I don't know the source, in somewhat Sanskrit or Pali. It is a little bit of a higher message, higher teaching, and it says, he is incapable of acting wrongly through fear. And this is a good lesson to consider. In this case, he is incapable. The he is the one who transcends delusion. In other words, this is Buddha. This is someone who is a Buddha, transcends delusion, and so is incapable of acting wrongly through fear. And I think this saying is a good example of the Buddha's teaching of cause and effect. Buddha say nothing in this world is born of its own volition. Everything is an effect caused by something before. So this says that anger does not arise from nothing. Anger does not arise from something outside ourself. Anger is the effect, and something else is the cause. Something that is part of the state of our mind is the cause of anger. And in this saying, it is the fearful mind, fear being the cause of anger. So this precept, this 9th precept, expresses the source of humanity's suffering, the cause of humanity's suffering, and it is the first noble truth that we human beings tend to be ignorant or deluded to the true nature of things, not understanding who we are fundamentally, not understanding our true nature. This is the cause of suffering. So what is this true nature? You can't describe it. or see it or touch it. The delusion that the Buddha spoke about is not seeing our true nature, not seeing who we are before we have dualistic thinking, because before we think of right and wrong, yours and mine, black and white, before we engage in dualistic thinking, before that state of our mind becomes active, there is our true nature. Our true nature is there before we see ourselves as separate and permanent existences. So when we don't know, when we don't recognize ourself in the true sense, we are fearful. When we don't recognize who we are in terms of our true nature, we are fearful. And we cling to the false ideas about who we are, or what we are, or who we want to feel that we are, or what we want to be. And when we hold on to these false ideas about ourselves, we are trying to protect some illusion of ourself. And this is what we humans do when we don't recognize our true self. We try to protect the illusion of a self that we create in the everyday world. So, because of our delusion, because of our ignorance of who we are, there's fear. And as we know, fear can lead to anger. And anger, in turn, can lead to cruelty and abuse. Abuse of ourself and abuse of others. So this ninth precept is important because anger inhibits our giving nature. Anger inhibits our caring. When anger is in play in us, we cannot act as according to our natural self. We cannot flow with life. And when we carry around anger, we separate ourselves, and it's an unhappy life. So anger is not unusual in people. Anger arises quite frequently. It arises because it is the way we can compensate for fear. Anger, in this culture and most cultures, anger is accepted as being a kind of strong emotion. And so when we become angry, it makes us feel like we are strong. As we know, in our world, someone who is angry has a chance of being respected and admired because they seem to have some kind of strength. And we know examples of people who act with anger, but yet they are respected for their strength. On the other hand, fear is a weak quality, and there's no admiration for someone who is weak. And if we feel weak, we feel separated and we feel like an outcast. So anger is a technique that humans use to compensate for fear. Anger is how we try to defeat fear when it arises. And that what that means is when the small or the limited view of ourself feels threatened, when our ego feels threatened, there's fear. So to cut off that fear, we have anger, which momentarily helps us avoid the painful feeling of fear. And avoid not just the painful feeling, but also the painful image and the destructive image. So we have the tendency, we human beings have the tendency to bring on anger when we face fear. But it is it's a bargain with the devil. So if we know somebody who is angry or acts angrily, it's not enough to say, don't be angry. This precept is quite limited. It says, don't be angry, but the source of the anger is quite complex. You cannot say to someone, well, get over it. You're angry, get over it. It's not so simple. People feel there is too much at stake to give it up because it compensates for fear. And it may create an image of us being strong. So people who have a tendency to anger will not easily give it up. Too much to lose, they feel. So we can only overcome our anger if we recognize our fear and accept responsibility to take care of it. And don't blame others when fear arises. So with our practice, with our continued practice, we can come to see that there is no basis, no rational basis for fear. When we see, when we recognize our true nature and the true nature of all things, we see there is no separate self and there is nothing to lose, so there is nothing to fear. When we have that insight, when we have that feeling and that sense of things, we see that it is impossible to lose anything. So why fear? Why have fear? No need to be angry. So in our everyday life, if we were to lose some material things, we can adjust our life to accommodate the loss of material things. Somebody steals your car. That's terrible, but we can adjust to that. But with emotional things, it's not so easy to adjust. So to say, don't be angry, that doesn't go very far. So looking at these precepts, we cannot just recite them back to ourselves. We have to really explore them. When we recognize our true self, there's no fear. We have to acknowledge that during our lifetime, we'll make mistakes. But do we have the confidence that we will learn from them? and have the confidence that we can adjust to any mistake that we made. If we have that confidence in ourselves, that we can learn and adjust, then there is no fear and no anger. So when we understand our true nature, we will not fear mistakes, which we know will come. We have no fear of what someone else might say or do. No fear means no anger. So the enlightened version of this precept says, dwelling in equanimity. Dwelling in equanimity, this is the picture of a happy life, of the saint's life, where the mind is always at peace. So the tenth precept, the final precept, says, don't abuse the three treasures. Three treasures being the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. No abusing the three treasures. And originally this was a vow taken by the Buddhist community. And I couldn't find an original version of this precept. So the first part of it, the first of the three treasures is the Buddha. The first part says, respect the Buddha. Don't abuse the three treasures, beginning with respecting the Buddha. Respecting the Buddha, not just the legend, you know, not just the statue. Respecting the Buddha in everyone. It's easy to bow to the statue, to chant something to the statue, to the legend of Buddha. But the deep meaning of this part of the tenth precept, respecting the Buddha, means relate to the true nature of everyone. Relate to the true nature of everyone uniformly. Don't relate to people based on if you like them or not, based on their unique qualities that give you pleasure. Relate to everyone equally. No like or dislike when it comes to respecting the Buddha in everyone. So part of our practice, part of the expression of our practice in our daily life, is always finding the best way to be with someone. Including people that we may not feel so comfortable with. Find the best way to relate to them. If we're always doing that, finding the best way, we are always relating to Buddha. And that is the best way to relate to our own Buddha nature. So actually, this precept about respecting the Buddha really means respect everyone. Respect everyone, independent of whether we like or dislike in the ordinary sense. And also respect ourself. Respect the Buddha nature of ourself. We respect ourself not out of pride, or not because of the need to show off or something. Respecting ourselves out of the confidence of knowing who we are. So the second part of this precept is unfolding the Dharma. First we have respecting the Buddha. Second part is unfolding the Dharma. So how do we do that in our life? How do we unfold the Dharma? Well, it's not with words. Maybe a little bit. We have in our library many, many words of the Buddha in his attempt to unfold the Dharma. Unfolding the Dharma really means to do it not so much with our words, but with our life. With our life. Unfolding the Dharma is what we are trying to do with our body and mind when we practice. We go through our day unfolding the Dharma when we carry a mind of practice. That is how we can live our life completely. Without attachment and without delusion and in harmony with all things. That kind of life comes about when we understand the true nature of things. And finally, the third part of this tenth precept is nourishing the Sangha, which means take care of the community. The small community, like this, and the large community, which is infinite, nourishing the Sangha. Providing it whatever it needs. And above all, nourishing the Sangha means no slandering or abusing others, because that violates all of the precepts. If we have disagreements with people, we have to face them openly. Keep nothing hidden. Not blaming the others for our anger or discomfort over a disagreement, but to keep nothing hidden so we can resolve it. So our practice is actually to live the life of the precepts. And this means not just reading them as a list handed to us by some teacher, but to pay attention, continually pay attention to our mental intention and take responsibility for our desires, which will come up. So we should notice our emotions. So if we ever feel like we want to hurt someone or get even with someone, physically or emotionally, we should acknowledge the anger that's causing that desire. Acknowledge that anger. And if we want to do something in secret or take something in secret by being dishonest, by doing it behind someone's back, we should notice the fear we have of being caught. the guilty feeling. We should acknowledge it. And when we notice that we want to give a boost to our own image, to give a boost to our own self-esteem, we should notice the emotion we have of not feeling approval from others or from ourselves. When we're trying to boost our ego, we should know we don't feel approved. And if we discover or notice that we are avoiding taking care of our responsibility, we are avoiding taking care of something, avoiding doing something that needs doing, if we really want to run away from doing something, we should notice the desire for comfort. Which is also the fear of discomfort. So with the mind of attention, we notice these things about ourselves. And when we do notice one of them or more of them, we stop. Stop what we are doing. Stop what we are doing and acknowledge that feeling. Pause and acknowledge that feeling and reflect on the cause of it. And then just sit quietly for a minute and don't do anything for a minute. Take a confident posture. Breathe slowly and deeply and let the mind be empty. Then we can return to our vow to uphold the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So, at the start, earlier tonight we said a Buddha is incapable of acting wrongly through fear. Or incapable of acting wrongly through any emotion. So we come here and practice here because we want to be Buddha with our life. We want to live the life of the Buddha. And when we have that motivation to live the life of the Buddha, we are already following the precepts. Does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, Megan.
It seems to me like anger can come from sadness too, and not just from fear. What are your thoughts about that?
I think they can exist together. I don't think, you know, if we become sad about something, I don't think it transforms into fear. I think they can come up together. They could exist side by side in us. if there's a tragedy. Well, sadness is about loss, losing something. It's about the something that we lost. And anger is directed at whatever it was that caused that loss. So I think they can be together. Yes, Dave.
Unless following what you just said, I think sometimes the fear that leads to anger is not necessarily fear for ourselves, but sometimes can be fear that we identify in others, and we feel empathy and compassion with them. I mean, if I'm watching television and I see someone like beating up a small child, I don't feel afraid for myself. I can empathize with the terror of the small child and feel angry toward the person who's doing it. And just to be more concrete about this, some years back, I know I came to you to talk about something that had happened to one of my loved ones in my life, and I was feeling terribly angry about it. And you pointed out that the source of that was my compassion for the person who had been so badly treated, and that I should watch when the compassion arose and stay and abide in that compassion and not let the compassion be turned into anger because I was sympathizing with her fear. And that was a very profound lesson for me, so thank you for that.
Yes, anger and fear are very tightly, closely related. Right now, these days, the last week or so, and with all the shootings, we can be angry at the shootings, and we can also fear that it may happen to somebody else tomorrow. That's a very powerful combination. If we experience anger and fear together, we can really become motivated to correct a situation that's causing a problem. And we see that happening now. Thank you. Oh, yes, please. Hi.
So, anger, fear, and then you mentioned fear comes from fearing of losing that we never own. Could you go a little more on that part where the attachment or the idea of ownership and how we can kind of let go a little bit more of that?
Hmm. So very often we have a strong sense of wanting to hold on to something. Fear of losing it is a result of not understanding the nature of the things of this world, which is a big lesson of Buddhism and the big contribution of Buddhism, big contribution to understanding that all things in the material world are impermanent, transient, and we cannot hold on to them. By their nature, we can't hold on to things. They're not ours, personally ours to begin with, they just come into our life temporarily. When we understand that, when we can get a little bit beyond the idea that I'm going to hold on to this permanent thing, we can get beyond that some and see, it's temporary. Then we find some peace. When the things we love disappear, we know that it's inevitable and that we can't own anything anyhow. But of course, it's very sad when it happens. Recently, somebody in our sangha, lost a pet cat. She's very, 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 very unhappy. It struck her very deeply because of the love between her and the cat. So, it's inevitable. And it happens. And it's not enough to say, get over it. We have to really struggle with those emotions when they arise and to work towards understanding the real nature of things so that sadness and fear and anger don't interfere with our lives. Thank you. It means we are always trying to answer the question, how can I create something in this relationship, something that is greater, greater than the sum of its parts? How can I make this relationship more than simply more than two people who are here at the same time? How can I help make a relationship so that there is a blossoming? Like the rain and the sun relate to the flowers, relate to the seeds, so that something can grow. So when we see the value, see how important it is to try to relate to people the best way we can, you know, there's a great joy in that, because we know we are always creating something. We can spend our whole life feeling that we are creating, when we just make our best effort to relate to each other and not just, you know, pass by. So if you meet someone, maybe somebody new, somebody you already know, in the back of your mind is, what can I create in this moment? That's very joyful. So in one of Suzuki Roshi's talks in the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, he says, we don't know who is doing the creating. We think that it's somebody called God that is doing the creating, but actually it's us. We do the creating in this world through our relationships with each other. And it's a very practical thing, you know, when two countries have a disagreement, but they try to have a conference, you know, to get past their disagreement, and they're trying to create something. So we can apply that to our everyday life, every moment of our everyday life. Let's create something.